And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Paul W. from El Cajon.
Hi, I'm Paul. I'm an alcoholic. Looks a lot different when you're standing up here. Out there, you only see one set of eyeballs. Up here, you see a few more. I want to say I was really looking forward to being here tonight. This is an honor and a privilege to be here, and I was looking forward to this up until about yesterday. And then the sheer horror hit me that I was going to be standing up here and sharing my experience, strength, and hope, hopefully. I want to thank the committee for offering me this opportunity to share. I come to this meeting on a regular basis, and it's a wonderful meeting. They have had some fantastic speakers, and so I think we ought to question the committee after tonight. Congratulations to the token takers and the people that received their cakes tonight. That's fantastic. There's a lot of sobriety there. And I want to welcome the newcomers. Welcome home. And I want to tell you that you're being given the keys to the kingdom. You know, stick around until the miracle happens. You know, and it will happen if you stick around. My sobriety date is November 3rd, 1983. And I don't say that to brag, because I basically had nothing to do with this. This is a God thing, and it's a gift. I do say that because there's a few 24 hours that are in those years, and that's all I have is 24 hours. I have today. If when I got to this program, Alcoholics Anonymous, if you had told me that I had to stay sober for the rest of my life, I don't think I would have stuck around. But at the time, I was told, you told me that all I needed to do was stay sober today, that I didn't have to worry about tomorrow. I just had to stay sober today. So I'll drink tomorrow, but I won't drink today. And I was able to trick myself into that because when tomorrow got here, it became today. So here we go again, you know. I won't drink today. And so that's why 24 hours is so important. We have that day. We have today. I grew up in a family. I grew up in a family that if they refused to drink, they obviously didn't understand the question, because there was drinking was pretty important. To call my parents alcoholics, I can't do that, but I can say that if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, chances are it's a duck. So I was raised by ducks. And, you know, it's in my hereditary. It goes back both sides of the family, Irish, German. And, you know, this is my right. I earned this. You know, being Irish and German, For so many years, that was my reason for drinking. That gave me the right to drink, because that's part of who I am. That's my heritage, you know. And so that would play a keen role in my recovery, and which I'll talk about down the road here. But, you know, I don't blame my alcoholism on my parents, and I don't blame it on my parents' parents. I did everything I possibly could to kill myself with alcohol. That was my deal, you know. Somewhere along the line, I took the reins, and I went whole hog in this whole thing, because there was something about alcohol that I really, really, really liked. I think we've talked about it. Cecilia's talked about it earlier, that something happens. You know, something happened to me. I remember as a young boy, my parents would be drinking, and you had to get them just right. You know, you had to get them when, you know, hadn't gone too far, and they were getting to that point, you know. And, you know, you always go over and see if you could pawn a sip off them, you know, and everything. It was funny at the beginning, because you'd make this funny face. I'd make a funny face and everything. And, you know, they would they would give you a little bit of a beer and everything. Oh, that was great. You know, first they would, you know, they'd give you just a little bit, and then pretty soon I'm taking the glass from them and drinking it because I want more than what they're willing to give me, you know. And so these were tricks that I learned as a young boy. My grandfather came to live with us. My mom's dad came to live with us when I was about third grade. And he was from Ohio. And he'd get up every morning, and my mom would pour him a glass of whiskey, you know. And I'd see this every morning, you know, and I'd wonder, you know. I eventually asked. I said, well, you know, why do you do this? And she told me that when you get older, sometimes you need something to get you going in the morning. You know, you need something to get your body moving. Well, she gave him one in the morning. She gave him one before lunch. She gave him one after lunch. She gave him one in the evening. So he was moving pretty good most of the time. But there was magic again there. There was something going on with this alcohol. There was something that I saw that was there. And so I was pretty interested in that. And my first drunk, I would think, the first time I really drank, I got drunk. It was three neighbors and myself. There were four of us, and his parents had gone out of town, and so he decided to take a bottle of whiskey and a bottle of vodka. And there was four of us, and we were passing the bottle around. You take a hit, and you pass it to your left. You take a hit, and you pass it to your left, you know. And the bottle's going real well, you know. It's starting to come down, and everybody's starting to get happy and giggling and everything like that. And I should have known something was up because all of a sudden, I got a bottle in one hand and a bottle in the other hand. I'm the only one drinking. Everybody else has stopped, you know. Everybody stopped passing the bottle around. Now, what's wrong with you guys? You know, why are you stopping? We're just getting going here, you know. And something happened when I drank that alcohol. It was magic. It burned going down, and it burned getting in my stomach, you know, and everything. I could feel it all the way in my toes and everything. And so if one hit is good, then 10 is even better, you know. So I kept drinking until those bottles were just about gone. I remember that we all got very, very sick, but that didn't matter. That didn't matter. There was something that had happened. Something had happened inside of me. There was a magic that happened inside of me. So, I pretty much didn't do a whole lot of drinking after that. I was sick. I didn't like that feeling, but the magic had already happened. So I was probably in high school when I started drinking a little bit more, and it wasn't something that I thought was bad. You know, we had a campus that you could leave at lunchtime, and I found a friend that his dad had a keg inside a refrigerator with a spout on the outside, and the mugs up in the freezer all frosted up and everything like that. So we'd run over there at lunchtime and suck down a couple of brewskis and then run back to school. And boy, that lasted for a short while until I couldn't get through the class without having to go to the bathroom. And so, you know, the alcohol was working on me. And I was going to a parochial high school. And the priest started figuring out there was something going on. I had to come back off of lunchtime to religion class, and so and boy, I couldn't wait. You know, it was like I need to get out of here. If he wasn't looking, I'm gonna dash out the back door and everything. And so it finally caught up to me. It was they got wise to this, and so had to stop doing that. But there was still something going on. There was some magic there. So when I got out of high school, I got a job. I was going to junior college and got a job at a grocery store. And those people know how to drink because they got alcohol there all the time. You know, we had all kinds of alcohol. So I'd get off work at midnight, and we would, you know, get off and bring out a couple of six-packs at a time and suck them down. And if we were still thirsty, they had the keys to the store. They'd walk back in, open it up, and we'd get a couple more six-packs and bring it out and start drinking them. And so everything was working pretty good. I learned how to catch up real fast, you know. If we went to a bar, these guys were always older than I was. I was 19, 20, and they were middle 20s, late 20s. And so they would take me to a bar, and usually by 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning after we'd gotten off work, there wasn't any problem getting into the bars. There wasn't any problem because I would go in with them and we'd start drinking. And you really got to catch up fast when you only have an hour and a half to catch up with everybody. So I learned how to play catch up real well. I'd like to say that during this time, I also did a little bit of drinking at home. I tried to, it was kind of funny, I tried to raid my parents', liquor cabinet, which was underneath the sink. You know, you go underneath the sink and pull the bottles out. Well, I have four brothers. Three of them are older than I am. And so I'm taking this whiskey and pouring it in a glass and sneaking it and drinking it and then filling the bottle back up with water. Well, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that I found out that they were hitting that bottle a heck of a lot more than I was. So I really was drinking water most of the time. It was colored water, you know, and I couldn't understand why my mother was so grumpy all the time. You know, it just wasn't working anymore for her. She was really grumpy. She couldn't understand why that glass was not working, you know, and I didn't realize it either. I started stealing beers then because they seemed to work better than the other stuff. So, during this time, I'm thinking that I'm doing really well. You know, alcohol still seems to be working for me. I'm still doing pretty well. I'm getting to work on time. I'm not missing work too often. I'm doing a lot of different things. I'm going water skiing, and that's a good reason to drink. And I start to learn how to play golf, and boy, that's a good reason to drink. And I get into a bowling league, and oh God, that's a good reason to drink, you know, and everything. And I, of course, I don't hang out with people that don't drink as much as I do. Because I'm realizing that some of these people drink a couple beers and want to go home. What the heck are you doing here? You know, I mean, it would be like we go to a party and there's alcohol left. You don't leave if there's alcohol left. I've never left when there's alcohol. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand it. Well, they couldn't understand me. And so I started hanging out with people that, we would be in a league. We were bowling in a league. And there were three guys and a girl. We were called the I guess I can say this. We were called the balls in the bag. And only alcoholics would think of that. So this. So. You know, this is a group that we're going to different bowling alleys all over the city. We were up in Poway, we were in Claremont, we were in Mira Mesa. It didn't matter. We would get into a league, and it was be a mixed league, and we'd start bowling. And the funny thing about these guys is that they drank as much as I did, and the more we drank, the better we got, and that really upsets everybody that you're bowling with. You know, because we would have a beer frame. If three people threw a strike and one didn't, then that person had to buy a pitcher. And so during any given, you know, game, we'd have three or four pitchers sitting up there on the wall, and we would be drinking them as fast as we could drink. And the drunker we got, the better we got. We won the league a couple of years in a row. They asked us not to come back, so we had to go to another bowling alley, it's the same old thing. It was amazing. These are the kind of guys I hung out with. So we took up there's three of us, the three amigos. We took up racquetball, and the only way you can play racquetball with three people is cutthroat, and that's what we do. This was my excuse to get out of the house and to go play and get some good physical exercise, right? And then go to the liquor store and drink down, six or eight, 10 beers, and then drive home. I thought that that was normal. That, to me, was living life. So come a little bit further down the road, I'm trying to... They talk about me in more about alcoholism. You read it here every week. It's about this alcoholic who tries to change everything. You know, he's only going to drink beer only. You know, he's going to not drink. I won't drink beer. I'll drink whiskey. See, I could always give up. I could give up alcohol for any period of time. I gave it up for a week. I'd give it up for a month. I could give it up for 6 months, because I realized that I knew that somewhere down the road I was going to be able to drink again. So that was going to be okay. I had enough willpower. I'm not like you guys. I got willpower. I'm not that person that is laying in the dumpster behind the grocery store, you know, staying warm with cardboard. Or I'm not the guy with the brown bag who's drinking on the sidewalk and everything. That wasn't me. I had the willpower. I wasn't gonna, you know, I could show you that I wasn't an alcoholic, and that was my way of proving to myself and to everybody around me that I didn't have a drinking problem. So I give up when I first started. I was giving up alcohol for Lent. You know, that's a piece of cake, man. That's no problem. Because Easter, I knew I was going to be able to drink again. So I'm in good shape, man. I can wait till Easter. Okay, so I give that up. And then, you know, I give it up for a different period of time. You know, if the heat got too much at home, then okay, I'll do something about it. Well, then a few years pass, and I'm no longer giving up alcohol. I won't drink beer. I'll drink scotch instead. You know, so that was my idea of giving up something. And so I did a lot of that, you know, and I could not drink for periods of time. That was fine. That didn't bother me, because I knew I had the opportunity to drink somewhere down the road. That's why I said, when I got here, had you told me that I couldn't drink for the rest of my life, I would have gone. I wouldn't have stayed. And thank God you told me I only had to not drink today. Today, I just had to not drink today. Just 24 hours. So I stayed sober long enough to get married, and you gotta figure there's something wrong with what you're getting into when your fiance asks you to don't embarrass, don't get drunk at your wedding. You know, don't get drunk, please control your drinking. You know, don't make a fool of yourself. Well, I didn't. You know, I found other drugs to get me to where I needed to get, so I didn't have to drink so much. And I had a great honeymoon. Great, you know, it was good. You know, I could, if it was necessary, I could step up and show you that I wasn't an alcoholic. I could do that, those kind of things. So I got to say that by the time I had two daughters, I had a 2-year-old and a newborn. And, you know, I was drinking differently now. I was kind of becoming a periodic. I was actually drinking. The last year I probably drank 3 times, you know, but those 3 times I tied it on, you know. Thinking back now, if that last time, if I'd have known that was going to be the last time I drank, doggone it, I would have done it differently, you know. In fact, I don't even remember it was being that good. I don't really remember that being. I just don't want to go back to it, though. I'm not willing to give that up. But I was drinking, and I probably got drunk 3 times the whole year. But there were times where there were decisions, important decisions had to be made, or, something important in the family had to be done. And I wasn't able to face that without getting drunk. See, when I got drunk, it took away all my options. You know, I just stayed drunk as long as I could, and those options that I had before I started drinking would eventually disappear. This option would disappear, that option would disappear, and then I would be stuck with the only alternative that was left. And now I could blame you for that alternative. You know, look at this is what I'm getting stuck with. Can you believe that? And it was always it was your fault. It was your fault. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't the fact that I was drinking all my options up. I made a promise when my daughters were small that I would go back to school and get my degree. And it was going to take me 2.5 years. So, excuse me. I felt that 2.5 years was nothing. I could stop drinking for 2.5 years, and I did. And I went back to school. I was going to school a couple nights a week, you know, for 5 hours, and a couple of weekends on Saturday. And I had a 2-year-old and a newborn at home. Had I drank during that period of time, I would have never finished school. I know that today. There was no way that could have happened. That couldn't have happened. And so after I graduated, the first thing I want to do is celebrate. The first thing I want to do is go out and buy some champagne. Look what I've done. I graduated. I did what I said I was going to do. But that at that point in time, my wife, who had now been going to Al-Anon for a while, and I hear the moaning and groaning. Actually, thank God she went to Al-Anon, because at that point in time, she was able to identify to me that I'm willing to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to go back and get a degree, but I'm not willing to try to understand what alcoholism is. I'm not willing to look at what alcoholism, you know, this heritage that I've been given. You know, alcoholism on both sides of the family. So she was able to convince me that if our daughter started to have a chance, that I needed to find out more about alcoholism. And, you know, and I thank her today for that. That was a gift from God. You know, at the time I decided to go through an outpatient program. So, you know, if you're in an outpatient program, you know, God bless you. God bless you, you know, or if you've been through one. I learned about the three-headed dragon. I learned about this three-headed dragon. Alcohol was only one head of the dragon. You still had your thinking head and your feeling head. And you had to slay all three of these heads in order to survive the dragon. And I didn't know that. And see, this was education that I needed, you know, to get. And so loaded with this education now, I feel like I'm capable of staying sober. Well, the counselor there suggested that I get to more meetings. And I was going to one meeting a week at the time. It was a Wednesday night meeting over here at St. Therese. And this was a happening meeting. It was a big meeting, and there were a lot of, there was some old curmudgeons running around there with a lot of sobriety, and there were young people all over the place. And this was a place that I really felt comfortable going to. But you don't get there too early, and you don't stay too late, because otherwise somebody's liable to ask you some questions or talk to you, and you're liable to tell them that you know, that you're faking it. And so, lo and behold, one night I was there at this Wednesday night meeting, and this gentleman came up. His name was Donnie, and Donnie comes up to me and he looks at me and he goes, "Hey, how you doing?" And I said, "I'm doing fantastic." He said, "Well, why don't you tell your face?" To me, I couldn't believe that he was talking to me like that. Yeah, I thought I was pulling this thing off pretty good, you know, but it was obvious that that I was hanging on. I was hanging on for dear life. So he did me a favor. He appointed himself my sponsor, and Donnie was. This was a man that was running around this room, laughing and scratching and acting like a crazy man. And I liked everything about it. I liked everything about it because he was happy. He was happy, joyous, and free. And I saw something there that I needed. And so he suggested that I start going to a men's meeting. And that was Water Walkers. And so I started going to this meeting, and I still go to this meeting. And it's been around for 25 years, and the topic is the same topic every single week. And it's, how is God working in your life? And I had no clue. I had no clue. When I started going to that meeting, we would go from house to house. One month you'd spend at somebody's house, and you'd meet there, and you had to be there on the last Monday of the month, because you had to find out where it was going to be next month, because somebody would volunteer and say, "Okay, I'll have it at my house," and we would go to somebody else's house. And all of a sudden, I started taking suggestions. He said, "You know, you should get into a step study. You need to work the steps." I said, but you know, what about my wife? You know, what about my kids? What about my job and everything?" And the only thing he ever said to me was, "Seek the kingdom of God and all will be added." And I thought, damn, this guy's a broken record. You don't understand. You don't understand. you know, my job is terrible. My wife is driving me nuts. Seek the kingdom and all will be added. You know, it took a long time for me to understand what Don was talking about. It took time because I ended up doing some service commitments with him. We took a panel into El Cajon jail. We used to call it the Styrofoam jail because people were kicking their ways out of it, you know, and coming outside. But I'll tell you, I was scared to death. I was scared to death to go into the jail. I had never, that was one of my yets. I hadn't been arrested. I hadn't lost a job yet. I hadn't lost a family yet. I used to say I hadn't crashed a car, but that's a lie. I did that when I was 19. I remembered that just the other day. I crashed this car when I was 19, and at the time, the message that I got from this accident, I totaled a car, and the message I got was, first of all, never drink on an empty stomach, because that's going to cause you trouble. And second of all, don't drink Old English 800. It wasn't that I had a drinking problem. It was just don't drink that crap, because you have a chance if you don't drink that crap. So that was probably the last time I drank it. And so I'm going into taking in a panel to El Cajon jail. And I got to tell you, some of those guys, we get 15, 20, 25 inmates, and they lock us in the room. And some of them look like they belong there. Some of them look like they need to be there. And then, you know, but when we got in that room together and we started talking about alcoholism, all of a sudden these big, mean, ugly-looking guys started talking about stuff that was going on inside of them, started talking about things that had happened to them in their life and why they were where they were at, you know. And I was amazed. I was absolutely amazed that that the only difference between them and me was they got caught and I didn't. I had done a lot of the things that they had done. I had driven drunk many, many, many times. Thank God I never, you know, killed anybody or hurt anybody. But some of these guys were just like I was. They were alcoholics. And they had made mistakes, and they got caught. And it opened my eyes up to a lot of how God had been working in my life for a long time, well before I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don was a sponsor that he was unique. I can look around the room and see quite a few people that had him as a sponsor at one time or another, and he was bigger than life. He was bigger than life. He's no longer with us, and this disease is cunning, baffling, powerful, and patient. That I know, and that I have got to continue to be on guard at all times, because I don't know when I'm going to have that urge to take that first drink. I got to tell you that the further I am from my last drink, the closer I feel I am to my next drink. And I know that I have another drunk in me. I just don't know I have another recovery in me. With Don, things started changing in my life. I started, meetings weren't so boring. Meetings were becoming more valuable to me. I had an hour and a half that I could shut down all that stuff that was going on in my head and all that stuff that told me that I wasn't enough, that I wasn't good enough, that I was never going to be good enough. All that stuff would stop and slow down, and I could listen to people share at a meeting, and I could listen to what was being said, and I could listen with my heart. That was something that I didn't realize I could do. But I couldn't do that until I had started working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So about 5 years was working for a company that delivers ice cream to grocery stores. You know, once you're in the grocery business, you're always in the grocery business. It's unfortunate, but And so I was delivering this ice cream. Well, I walk into this store, and there's I go to the coffin cases. Ice cream is it's usually set in coffin cases. Now they put them in uprights where they have doors. But at that time, they were all in what we call coffin cases, and they'd lay the product down there, and the ice cream would be down there. Well, I walk in, and there's a man face down in the ice cream. And I said, you know, excuse me, get the hell out of my way. I got to stock this ice cream, you know. And I knew this guy. I know him from different stores. And he looked at me, and I looked in his eyes, and I knew exactly how he felt. I knew exactly, because there were plenty of days when the first thing I did when I got to the store to go to work was to run to the back room, go in their big freezer where they keep everything really deep frozen and everything, and stand in there for 5 minutes and just breathe and try to clear out my head and try to clear out all of that craziness, all that hangover that I was living with, you know. And so I told him at that time, this was the first time I ever broke my anonymity. I was afraid to do that. I didn't know where it was going to take me. And I finally broke my anonymity with this man. And I said, you know, I know how you're feeling. We talked for about 15, 20 minutes. Eventually, he came to a meeting with me. I picked him up, took him to a meeting. He became my first sponsee. And something happened to me by what I did that day. Something happened inside of me. I went to meetings, and I had there was a different person coming to the meeting. There was a purpose for me going to that meeting now. I was no longer taking from the meeting. I was bringing to the meeting. And there was a difference in your alcoholism. There's a difference in your recovery when you start bringing to the meeting. You know, you can be around the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, or you can be in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was no longer looking to see what you could give me. I was offering what I could bring to the meeting. And from there, there has been a fantastic relationship. I got to say that that gentleman is still sober. The first couple of people that I started meeting people at step studies, that would be their first meeting, and I'd go out of my way to say hi to them and talk to them about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and pretty soon I had a couple other gentlemen that I was sponsoring at the time, and I still do. It's a fantastic Sunday morning meeting, and it was the Battery Chargers at 9 o'clock in the morning. If you need a meeting on Sunday. And at the time, we were over at the API Center, and it had gotten so big that they took it to the Adolescent Center over at Alvarado. And they had a big gymnasium, and we were having our meeting in the gymnasium. Well, volunteered, of course, to set up. And so the four of us would set up in the morning, but we'd get there at 7 o'clock in the morning and bring a basketball and play basketball for about an hour before the meeting and then set everything up. And you know, it was that kind of commitment, that kind of service work that made a difference in my sobriety. It made a difference. Now I'm being kept sober by the people that I'm given the privilege to work with. You know, that's amazing. You can't, you know, and you can't give away something you don't have. So now I'm hustling like mad to try to get something, you know, and I'm working the steps, and I'm staying in a step study, and I'm looking at myself, and I'm trying to change the way I feel, you know, because I can still walk into any situation, and I can find the worst thing possible. You know, I can take a compliment from my wife and turn it into a. I'm not lying. I can take a compliment from my wife and turn it into something that it appears that she's attacking me. And you know, there's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with me when that is the situation. And so I continue to work this program at Alcoholics Anonymous. I continue to go to step studies. I continue to look at myself. You know, how can I become a better person? You know, it wasn't until I sat down and started realizing that because of the three meetings, I go to 3 to 4 meetings a week. I still do that. I go to a Sunday morning Battery Chargers. I go to Monday night Stag Men's, Water Walkers. I go to a step study, Porter Hall, on Thursday night, and I try to get to this meeting on Saturday night. And, you know, I continue to do that because I don't know which meeting, if I drop one of them, which meeting is going to send me back out. I don't know which meeting is keeping me sober, but I know together they do, because it's a tremendous combination that I feel like I have. If you're not in a step study, get into a step study. If you haven't been through the steps, get into the steps. That's where the magic happens. That's where the lights go on. That's where you get to see somebody, read the 12 and 12 and realize something that they never realized before. You know, that's where I get that opportunity. I get to share in a step study. It's a structured step study, and I can't share unless I do the reading. Every time I go through this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, every time I read through this book again, something different comes out. Something different means more to me than it has ever meant before. And some of the things that I thought were so important before don't mean anything to me today. You know, I want to continue to grow in this program. I want what I see in this room. I see a lot of great sobriety. Everybody in this room has something that I want, you know, because God talks to me through you. So I had learned a long time ago that if I want to hear the message, I better be where it's being spoken. And that's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's going to a meeting. Sponsorship? Absolutely. You got to have it. You got to have it. One of the things that I would like to share is over these years, I've incorporated a retreat twice a year into my recovery. And it's a men's retreat that is held twice a year. And that retreat has really also helped save my life. The retreat masters in the past have been recovering alcoholic priests. And I remember the first retreat I went to, the first priest was, he was sharing about Alcoholics Anonymous. He was sharing how he makes his relationship with God. How does he improve his relationship with God? And one of the statements that he made that struck me was, he had been a priest for 50 years, and he had been an Alcoholics Anonymous for 25. And he said he didn't find God till he got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to me, that let me know that I was doing exactly what I was supposed to be doing. I was hearing what I was supposed to hear. I'm the type of alcoholic that wants what he wants when he wants it, and I'm not going to be happy whether I get it or not. I need to sell a car. I just want to get rid of it. I'll put a low price on it, get rid of it, get it out of there. Somebody comes up, buys it right away. Damn, I should have sold that for more. I should have held out for more. I would complain if you hung me with a new rope. Because, it's just, I always want more. And that has been part of my addiction. I always want more. If one is good, then 10 is better. You know, I remember before I got sober, I remember I heading back here real quick, but I was thinking about how when we read about more about alcoholism, how it talks about all the different things. I think I hit on this, how we try to trick ourselves and everything. Well, I'll tell you, if you want to have fun, if you're not done drinking, by all means, please. You know, we can refund your misery without any problem at all. But during that time of me trying to prove that I wasn't an alcoholic, I remember trying to count beers. That was something that was pretty important to me. You know, I will show you, we're going to go to a party, and I will show you that I'm not an alcoholic. So I'll drink one beer an hour. Oh, why would I make a statement like that? What in the? Because after I've had my beer, I got to sit for 55 minutes and wait for another one. Why would I make a statement like that? I had to be lying. I was lying, you know. And then because I have to wait for 55 minutes, I'm going to make your life miserable. I am going to make your life miserable. You are going to want me to have another one. There were so many tricks that I've played, but you know, today I'm blessed. I'm blessed because today I have the prayers and the love of people like you in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous like this. And I want to give a special thanks to Carlos and Karen. Thanks for being here. You know, I guess what I can finish with is something that I started with. If you're a newcomer, you've been given the keys to the kingdom. Stick around until a miracle happens. You won't regret it, I guarantee you. Thanks for letting me share.